Up next, Fran Michelle brings us the World Red Red, obviously themed around Labor Day. Fran.
Good morning and happy Labor Day. Or is it? You might have noticed that labor's not doing so well lately. Multiple recent studies confirm that while productivity has grown over the past 30 years and even over the last 10, wages have slowed, stagnated, and declined. Recent income growth has gone overwhelmingly to the top 1%. The average CEO now makes 354 times what the average worker does, and 4 out of 5 Americans, 80% of us, are economically insecure. But fast food workers have been visibly protesting their circumstances over the past year, including a one-day strike last week when workers walked off their McJobs in 58 U.S. cities. Calling for an increase in their wages to $15 an hour, as well as for unionization, the campaign has highlighted the difficulties faced by low-wage workers. In New York, a Communities for Change survey of fast food workers revealed that 84% had suffered wage theft, and the state attorney general there has launched an investigation. As Mazen Laban observes on MRZine, wage theft takes many forms and occurs in many industries, where employers might not just directly refuse to pay wages, but, among other tactics, might require work off the clock or pay overtime hours at standard rates or take improper deductions from paychecks or pay only with prepaid debit cards that involve inescapable fees. Jenny Brown in Labor Notes observes that the one-day strikes and media campaigns seem less oriented toward unionization than toward pressuring local governments to raise minimum wage law, support paid sick leave, or make other changes that might improve workers' lives. Such reforms are obviously well worth supporting. The actions may give some workers new skills and community alliances on which to build, and the growing popular recognition of economic injustice might provide support for more radical change. But despite the potentially radical nature of the tactic of the strike, the fight for 15 may itself not be about building a movement to organize workers and fight bosses. Adam Weaver on Machete 408 points out that much of the campaign has been funded and orchestrated by the SEIU, and that, quote, instead of a march on the boss directed toward the corporations robbing workers daily, rather this is a march on the media, where the strikes serve as the visuals in a narrative of worker protest crafted by professional media consultants. Actions are scripted and run by the staff, themselves young, overworked, underpaid, and working to meet difficult mobilization quotas. And the ultimate shots are called by officials in Washington, D.C., not spontaneously by workers from below. Workers are brought into the campaign with little training on organizing, shop floor issues remain unaddressed, and, Weaver suggests, calls for change seem directed at lobbying the same entrenched political system, appealing to change from above, and attempting to retool the existing system of profit, inequality, and exploitation. Similarly, Laban notes that it's not just that workers face a problem of wage theft, but that wage work is theft. Quote, for capital to exist, the worker must perform surplus labor, labor in excess of what is necessary for the reproduction of the worker, which is realized as surplus value and profit. The origin of surplus value is the difference between the exchange value of labor power, the wage, and the exchange value of the commodities that labor power produces. Capital becomes capital when it appropriates that excess for which it gives no equivalent. Thus, even when the employer does not directly steal wages but pays them in full and on time, he still appropriates labor for which he has paid nothing, surplus labor or forced labor, end quote. A blogger at The Right to Be Lazy points out that both Labor Day and the International Workers' Holiday of May Day have roots in the struggle to limit working hours, the struggle for the 8-hour day, the struggle for worker control over not just wages, but the conditions of work. Quote, the demand for control of the workday was grounded in the insight, now seemingly lost, that workers should benefit from the increase in productivity. Paul Lafargue, known for his essay The Right to Be Lazy, stated in 1883, quote, a good working woman makes her needle with her needles only 5 meshes a minute, while certain knitting machines make 30,000 in the same time. Every minute of the machine is thus equivalent to 100 hours of the working woman's labor, or again, every minute of the machine's labor gives the working woman 10 days of rest. In order to move toward a contemporary notion of such economic democracy, that blogger proposes that income has to be separated from jobs. The term defining this idea in the U.S. is basic income guarantee, BIG. The demand for basic income has a venerable history. Alan Shahan points out that Martin Luther King advocated for it in his 1967 book, Where Do We Go From Here? That a 1969 presidential commission unanimously recommended it. And the idea has even been supported by conservatives like Charles Murray. As Shahan observes, quote, to rely on jobs and economic growth does not work. Job creation is a completely wrong approach because the world doesn't need everyone to have a job in order to produce what is needed. We need to rethink the concept of having a job. When we say we need more jobs, what we really mean is we need more money to live on. Today, there are more than 300 income-tested federal social programs costing more than $400 billion a year. Much of that money goes for administrative expenses, not to the needy. The U.S. net worth is $58 trillion. That's an average of $185,000 for each man, woman, and child in the country. As Laban suggests, the struggle must not stop at the defensive demands for higher wages and must make the leap to the political struggle against capitalism. The struggle to abolish the conditions that compel workers to exchange their creative capacities for a wage in order to live. As long as labor takes the form of wage labor, as long as the worker is compelled to work for a wage, the worker's very existence is dependent on the production of the very power that, vampire-like, lives only by sucking living labor and lives the more labor it sucks. And suck it does, very hard. The struggle against wage theft must become the struggle against wage labor, the struggle to abolish the conditions that compel workers to work for less than is necessary for their existence as workers, against the conditions under which the producers of food from farm to franchise cannot feed themselves and their families, the struggle to abolish the paradoxical conditions that compel workers to relinquish their life so that they may continue to live. The capacity to work should not exclude the capacity to refuse to work and to revolt, to liberate the creative capacities of labor from the shackles of capital accumulation. End quote. If on Labor Day the workers are invited to celebrate work, let's remember the holiday's kinship with May Day, when workers commemorate the struggle to gain control of work, and in fact, to abolish it. For the Old Mole Variety Hour, this has been Fran Michel.
It is we who plowed the prairies, built the cities where they trade, dug the mines and built the workshops, endless miles of railroad laid. We stand outcast and starve amidst the wonders we have made, but the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong. All the world that's owned by idle drones is ours and ours alone. We have laid the wide foundation, built it skyward stone by stone. It is ours not to slave in, but to master and to own, while the union